Hello there, everybody. Welcome to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. This week's very special episode. They all are, but this week's pretty cool. But before we get to that, let's talk real quick about the couple of sponsors we have on this show. Okay, Manskirt Brewing, okay, located in Hackettstown, New Jersey, which is slowly becoming like the brewery capital of New Jersey. So go there. It's in the old bank building on the main strip there. Okay, they always have seasonally inspired ales. The brewery's changing. It's always got cool artwork. Just real cool people. So go there and check out Joe and his Manskirt. That's correct, Manskirt. But they make great beer, and it's just a really cool place to go chill and get a flight of beer, check out a whole bunch of different things. So again, it's located in Hackettstown, New Jersey. Now, they got their Bedunkle Dunk, okay, on tap. They also have their Hop Jostler, a delicious IPA. So they always got new things going, but on Saturday, November 5th, this Saturday, the Northern New Jersey Brewery and Dinner Tour. It's $75. You get a brewery tour. You get to hop on board, join us for a ride. Okay. Meet them at the Rockaway Mall. Check out breweries like Angry Eric, Manskirt, Zigmeister, and Jersey Girl all on one tour. Okay. And then your final destination is the Mohawk House in Sparta, New Jersey. It's one of my favorite restaurants. They have 50 taps of awesome beer. So Manskirt Brewing's always got something going on, and they're just a really good business. So please give them a like on Instagram and Facebook and whatnot. Next, we got Demented Brewing, one of my favorite breweries in New Jersey, located in Middlesex, New Jersey. If you go right down 287, you'll find Demented Brewing. Okay, and they just have one of the best tap rooms, okay, tasting rooms there is. Okay, they're doing barrel programs every Sunday. They put out something new. They gotta have a tap room with 16 taps on it. Every Sunday, something new comes out. In fact, they just released Gollum, which was their chocolate brown porter that was brewed at the Wales Homebrew Club. And this Sunday coming up, they were going to be releasing Hometown Hero, their light pilsner lager. Okay. Which brings us to Wolf Nation. Wolf Nation, W-U-L-F Nation clothing and apparel for men, for women, for children. Okay. Wake up, live free. All right. You know, it's just about getting out there on your own and doing something that you love to do, not living under someone else's paycheck, okay, or under their time. All right, so wake up, live free. Go follow them Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all that fun stuff. Finally, Trivia Revolution. Every week, all different locations in New Jersey, you can find Trivia Revolution, which is fueled by craft beer. Go out and play some trivia. Win prizes to breweries. Win prizes to different bars. And each week there's a bonus item. If you follow on Facebook, if you follow on Instagram, you bring it, you get points. You can win if you're in last place. It's just a good night out and a great company. So go out and support Trivia Revolution. Go out and have a beer. You come to Tap House 15, okay, every Wednesday I'm there. So yeah, that's Trivia Revolution fueled by craft beer. Today on the podcast we have comedy legend Eddie Brill. Now, Eddie Brill worked on the David Letterman show for 17 years. He's pretty much worked with every great comic there is. He did the booking for Letterman. He was the warm-up comic. So just an overall super nice, intelligent, you could just feel the energy he has for stand-up comedy just out of every sentence he says. So it was a really fun interview. So tune in for Eddie Brill, and later on tune into why I can't go ride a mule. But enjoy the podcast.
Hey, this is Eddie Brill, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hello, Mike Berlew. Welcome to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast.
I'm still looking around, Scott. You're not going to fool me a second time. When's this surprise party starting?
Yes, it's been like 3 weeks since we've been like in studio, if you want to call it, in studio or at my desk, or in the little nook of my house with no walls. But we are back. The last time we were here, we carved the pumpkins. We did the Halloween one. That's
correct.
At least 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So it's been a while, but then the last cast, if we go back an episode, is was your surprise party.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Win, ber, lose, or draw, as I as I titled it. So were you surprised?
I was surprised, but I had some thoughts going into it. Now that the evening's kind of passed, I mean, number one, like, I remember going on vacation and thinking in my head, like, the list of people you said that would be there, and I was kind of like, well, that was most of the people from the Rich McDonald Bros, so
mm-hmm.
off the bat, I kind of had, like, a somewhat feeling going into it.
Right.
And the kind of kicker was when we were at the Redskins game, my girlfriend decided to text Gina, who was making the cake. So after the Skins do something great, I turn to hug my girlfriend, and I look, her phone's like blatantly in my face with a Redskins cake on it. I'm kind of like, oh, what's that? And she said, what are you looking at? I'm like, nothing, nothing. And then I had to play the whole, oh, I didn't see anything kind of deal.
Right.
And
so you saw the cake.
Well, she sent a Redskins-type cake. Mm-hmm. Apparently, like, Gina was asking, well, send me something with the emblem on it so I can prepare the cake.
Right.
And then,
so did you think that was for just, like, a birthday party or something, or, like, for at home?
I mean, again, it pointed back to when I had my first suspicions going into it. And then going into the day, Izzy was kind of chuckly, which kind of sealed the deal there.
Yeah, yeah. She was our biggest worry.
Yeah.
I just texted her over
and
over.
She never officially said,
OB, what? What do you want?
He's like, 3 weeks back, I want my mic time.
What do you want? There's
nothing
you could possibly want.
Hmm.
What do you want? You're looking at
All right, wall. Scott's bringing out the basket of toys. He's throwing one in there. OB doesn't want it. Obi's now looking through the basket of toys, and he selected the bone. For all of yous who picked bone, you've won. Congratulations. Tune in next week to find out what Obi's barking at.
Yeah, so I must have texted Izzy like 50 times, like, don't blow it. Don't blow it. Mm. She's like, well, there's a couple things she'd be like, well, we'll just keep the cake in our house, and we'll just put it in the bottom shelf, and I'll tell Mike not to look at it. I'm like, no, he's definitely going to look at it.
Babe, why can't I look in my fridge again?
No.
I kind of put the food in there, and kind of take the food out of it.
Yeah. Okay,
well,
so...
That kind of added to it, too, when it was like, when Gina and her husband Michael came up, and they're like, oh, we have to rush over to Alex's, because Alex's cousin needs a cake, and she won't come over here to pick up the cake, so we have to go over there for the cake. I'm like, there's a lot of stuff going on here.
Right.
So
okay, so
it was never an official aha.
Well, yeah, there's no way you knew what it was, because
no,
that was that was something pretty unique. So yeah, I wanted to do some kind of roast type thing, but it actually in essence was a reverse roast, where you were kind of roasted through contestants learning about you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the panel was awesome.
Good job, AJ, for not showing up.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Thanks, AJ Mattioli. Day of 2 hours before, but John Trumbull stepping in and winning the coveted headshot.
Yeah, nice closing there.
Yeah, the headshot that you had to sign. And
I don't know how to sign. Apparently, like, a lot of the words were cut off by the frame. So
well, I'm surprised you could write a sentence. So that's it's a bonus. Rich McDonald, Joe Fernandez had some zingers during the photo roast, and Doug was Doug, and that was
Doug showed.
Yeah. Doug, I literally put on the panel just to, because I knew exactly what was going to happen. There has to be someone that's like, boo. You know, like, and Doug, you didn't disappoint. You filled that role perfectly.
He's a perfect 100% when it comes to that.
Yeah. Let's see what else. I smashed your glass head.
Yeah.
Negan style.
Mm-hmm. My girlfriend told me you wanted the Macho Man figure or the Hulk Hogan.
I wanted the Macho Man. I was thinking about burning the Macho Man, too.
It wasn't blinking eye to me. Like, the reason I had it was back in the day when I was dating a girl, it used to be like we'd go to flea markets and buy stuff for eBay when eBay was the stuff. So yeah. It's not like I cherished the Macho Man figure. It was just, it was always, it's like, oh, I'm going to eBay it. Then eBay kind of went down, and then I put it away. And then when Izzy was going to move in, I started cleaning out the stuff, and I was laughing my ass off at the stuff I found in the back.
What about the head? What about the head? Do you miss the head?
I don't miss the head, but I jokingly around told the girl, I could just buy another one. She's like, no, they're not selling them anymore. And then she looked on Pier 1. She's like, oh, my God. It's a popular item.
Well, I gave you in memoriam of the head. I gave you a picture framed with the head that says R.I.P. on it. So you always have that memory.
In hindsight, it's like, I knew it was never coming back. So what am I going to do?
Yeah. I like packed a hammer in my gear bag. I'm like, this is gonna be awesome. But
would have been great if Shard shot out and like hit Doug Max in the jugular.
Yeah. Two for one. Kill one head and one Jew. But yeah, overall a pretty successful. Actually went much better than I even thought, because I was not sure. You know when you're doing something that's brand new, you're not sure at all how it's gonna go. Especially with something like that was like a lot of moving parts and, you know, hooking up the TV and making the PowerPoint. So running the audio, the show, the PowerPoint, and the questions at the same time was kind of cumbersome, but we pulled it off.
Yeah, and I give credit to the panel. I mean, they brought a game there. They could have just phoned it in. It's like, whatever, it's a Monday. I'm wondering what's happening at Raw, and they went to roast.
Yep, they did a pretty good job. We interviewed your dad. Well, I interviewed your dad.
Yeah, Pops.
Pop Burles. Told us a little bit about you as a toothbrush and you hurting yourself and clarifying that you are the weird one.
I don't remember that in the conversation.
Oh, he said that because I asked him if you had any weird girlfriends. He's like, no, Mike's the weird one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah. So, just clarifying things that we...
The other thing I got, like, apparently, three people who were in the audience went up to Izzy after the show and said, damn, Mike sounds exactly like his dad.
Yeah. You definitely have the same...
twang?
Drawl, or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, twang.
There's a good old boy.
Equinox. What was the word? Sue, Equinox.
It was Sue, Equinox.
Oh, Lamb-based.
Lamb-based.
And Vos Defra.
Yeah. That was a good bet by Rich.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a lot of work, but it definitely definitely paid off, if you ask me.
Yeah.
But
it was charitable, and I'll admit on the air, like after the night, I was kind of happy crying.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah.
Did you celebrate birthdays a lot as a kid, or?
No, basically with the family. I mean, my dad didn't make good money, but didn't make great money, so it was kind of like he told all of us, he's like, you know, we'll give you like a card or something really small, but we'll just basically add two gifts at Christmas.
Right, so Christmas was the big thing.
Yeah, Christmas was the big gift day. So
yeah, well, there you go, buddy. I'm never celebrating your birthday again, so that was the final.
But 41's only 360 some away.
Yeah, I know. I'm planning the next surprise game show.
Honey, Scott wants me to go to Ogden, Utah. This must be the surprise party. He got me a one-way ticket.
Yeah, it was like working up to the couple, like an hour before I left. I was pretty much still getting things together. Questions and fixing things, and but yeah, it was well worth it. So go back and listen to that episode 124.
Yeah, and while you're at it, can you listen to a couple of the other ones?
Yeah, or any of them.
Yeah,
but yeah,
episode 57 was awesome. I think
We need like people to listen to the last few, the old ones, whatever. I mean, they did good.
Yeah,
we need these ones to start doing good.
Mm-hmm.
But which we'll have to talk about later. But
all right,
guest time. Guest time. Got a pretty interesting guest on the podcast today. It's been it seems like a long time since we talked to a guest, even though it was only a couple weeks ago. It was Larry Zerner.
I like the way how you said Zerner.
Zerner.
Yeah.
Zerner.
Larry Zerner.
Larry Zerner. The Burles is connected.
You said it.
No, I didn't call you the Burles. Yeah, I'll never call you the Burles.
You will.
No.
Yeah,
no,
you will.
No.
You will.
So, through Twitter, I got in touch with, he actually followed us, and then I contacted him, Eddie Brill. Now, Eddie Brill is, he's been in the business forever, basically. You know, he's a comedian, writer, actor. He was the warm-up comic on David Letterman, okay? He was the talent booker, okay, on David Letterman, like the talent coordinator. So this guy's probably seen every name possible, you know?
Even ours?
Yeah, I remember those Verbal Shenanigans guys. They were kooky.
Oh, man, I tried to get him on, and Dave's like, no, no, man, I'm retired, sorry.
But, yeah, Eddie Brill, so this should be pretty cool. So let's open a beer first.
All right. One for you. I got to get a new opener.
Yeah. It finally.
I thought you were there for that. Yeah, the...
Maybe I wasn't, I don't know.
I went to open it, and then the tooth just broke off of it, and it was just like a plastic bottle there. Yeah. It's like, oh, no!
Did you cry?
No, it was more laughing.
Oh, I would have cried. All right, let's get Eddie Brill on the podcast. It should be pretty cool.
Hey, Scott.
Hey, Eddie, how's it going?
I'm all right. How's it sound on the phone?
You sound great. You sound like an angel.
An angel. Hold on, let me see. If I put you on speakerphone, will that sound lesser?
It probably won't sound as good, but try it out. I'll tell you how it sounds.
We are on speaker.
Oh, yeah, right. It's not bad at all. Not bad.
Okay, as long as you're not getting any feedback.
No, we're good so far. I'll let you know.
All right, now try your Bluetooth. Now try your stereo.
Yeah.
But Eddie, thanks so much for popping on. I'm Scott. This is Mike Berlew here.
How's it going, Eddie?
Say that. What was the last part?
Oh, this is my co-host here, Mike Berlew. He's the other voice on the line.
Hey, Mike.
How's it going, Eddie?
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
I'm good, thanks.
Eddie.
You know, it's funny.
Yeah, go ahead.
I heard it sounded like you said, have you done many? I'm like, huh? What? Well, you know, I tried a couple. Even the dog's barking.
I know. He's like the third mic on this cast. He doesn't shut up. But, Eddie, thanks so much for popping on. First off, you look at your career. You've been in the business, the comedy business, for what seems like forever.
I know. But I wouldn't have it any other way. You know, I never dreamt I would do this or be in this. I always loved comedy, and my family really loved comedy like crazy. My mom and dad always had comedy records, and they were always going to comedy shows, and, you know, they really, you know, so it was, and they're very funny people, so it was always around. So, you know, they weren't in the business or anything, but when I got into college, all of a sudden, I was in the comedy business. It just, I happened to fall into it in college, and, you know, I've been in one form or another, or many forms, and I love it with all my heart. It just doesn't seem like I could do anything else or would do anything else.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, like, when you were in college, did you were you a stand-up, or were you into writing, or everything?
Well, you know, when I first went there, I went for broadcast journalism, and I met some folks early on who were forming a comedy group. So we formed this comedy group, and I'd never done anything like it, but and I don't think a lot of the other people had. A couple of people had, but mostly hadn't. And we just, you know, wrote sketches out of these ad libs, and we put on shows, and it was like insanely popular at Emerson College in Boston. And that was, you know, in 1976, 77 was my freshman year.
And
it was really great. And we had a lot of friends who became top comedians who had been part of the Emerson thing. When I was there, Stephen Wright and Mario Cantone and Dennis Leary and Mike McDonald. And then after us was Bill Burr and David Cross and Laura Keitlinger. And, you know, just on and on and on.
Never heard of any of those guys.
No.
Yeah, exactly. And the funny thing is that when we were hanging out together, you never thought that was anyone would be found. You know what I mean? You're just doing it because
Love it.
That's what you do. Yeah.
Now, like, this was, if you're saying the 70s, this was like kind of before that big comedy boom. Like, so were you just, were you working nightclubs? Were you working comedy clubs? Or was it all like on the campus?
Well, in the later part of the 70s, I tried stand-up. Stephen Wright was my friend, and he was doing stand-up, and he was so good, so right away. And so I went to see him, and then I figured I'd give it a try. And I did it a few times at some local clubs, mostly this place called the Ding Ho, which I did only two or three times. And Barry Crimmins ran that, and he was a great comic from Boston who is finally getting his due.
Yeah, he just put out a special, right? Didn't he just put out something recently? Yeah.
Yeah, Louis C.K. produced it.
Yep.
Just a really great guy who took good care of all of us and created the scene and really cared about quality, which, you know, he demanded that early on. So it was really, really nice. And then I graduated college and I quit comedy. I thought, well, that was fun, you know, but I think I need like a job or something. So I was in Boston, Emerson in Boston. I moved to New York. Because, you know, my two best friends from the comedy group had moved to New York. My father lived there. I wasn't close to him at that time, and it was kind of nice to get closer to him. My sister lived there. So it just seemed natural. Move on. And I went to New York and did some, you know, writing for an advertising agency, sort of comedy stuff. And then in 1984, the opportunity came. A friend of mine I went to college with said, hey, this place I work at, they want to do a comedy show. Will you run it?
Okay.
And I went, all right, okay. And then that was like 1984. And it was this comedy club I started called The Paper Moon. And I had a lot of help and a lot of good people. And especially Colin Quinn, who was there at the beginning, to help me out a lot. And it was very, very successful. And all of a sudden, I'm a stand-up comic. That becomes my job, you know. And I haven't stopped since then.
So you started running a club.
Yeah, that was the Paper Moon, and that was 1984. So, in essence, I've been involved in, you know, like booking comedians in a sense since 84. Yeah, it's like 32 years. So
you got any openings?
Yeah, I do. In an hour, I'll be done with this podcast and we'll do something else creative.
I'm available for all fundraisers, open mics.
I don't blame you. I think we should have a fundraiser for ourselves, and we'll raise money, and we'll go out and have dinner.
Sounds good to me.
Now,
I like it.
When you're building this comedy room, do you change how you feel in looking at talent and what you like in comedy versus what you feel would look good on stage or anything like that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. When you're first involved in anything, you learn as you go along. You make mistakes and you try different things, but you give everyone a chance. And that's the beauty is, like, you know, I had so many great mentors in my life, people that took very good care of me. And that's what I vowed, and the people that we were in that same group as I was, you know, and through generations, you just vow to be like that for other comics. So all I was trying to do was give comics an opportunity to work. And, you know, and that's all I've been doing pretty much my whole life, you know, because if I give comics opportunity to work, then there's a lot of work to be had. And then I'm working with a lot of great comics, and, you know, it all makes sense. So that's all I've been doing my whole life, is trying to give, you know, opportunities to others. And at the same time, you know, getting opportunities because, you know, I just put incredibly talented people together. Really fun.
It's funny you say that. I was just listening to Joe Rogan and Joey Diaz talking, and they were talking about how they love giving young comics these opportunities because it helps inspire them to be better. Like they were talking, like, you know, they'll see someone at the Ice House open mic and, like, you know, do something like, hey, maybe it's not there yet, but it's just, you know, someone saying something really funny. And like Joe Rogan was talking about how he loves seeing it because it pushes him into, like, to bring guys out on the road that help push them and get better. Like, they were just talking about the same thing, how, like, helping other people makes them better comics. Do you find the same thing, or?
Yeah, definitely. It's great to hear, you know, Joe, you know, say that. And, you know, one thing you see through the generations of comedy is that this kind of thing goes on and on. When I first did Letterman, the very first time as a guest, I had help from Joan Rivers, and I had help from David Brenner. And I didn't know either of them very well. I knew who they were, but they reached out to me and helped me. You know, it was, you know, ridiculous, incredible. And then, you know, I remember when I was at the Comedy Store in L.A. in the 80s, Sam Kinison and people like Louis Anderson and even Roseanne Barr, you know, they really opened up stuff for me. So all these opportunities came, you know, and I opened up the door for these people. And it's a cycle that should be done. There shouldn't be like that attitude of, like, you know, jealous, or you just only can be the best who you can be. And you got to reinvent yourself 1,000 times because you grow up and you learn. And
right.
And every time it's a learning process. And that's what you get from hanging out with these older type comics. Like, you talk to old men like Don Rickles, or, you know, I wish I could talk to George Burns. I never did. But these people are in their 80s, 90s, 100. They're still getting on stage.
Don Rickles is still doing his show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's doing it sitting down. Yep.
And phenomenal. Phyllis Diller, I met her, and she was like 80-something, and she was so spry. And I was talking to her about comedy. She said, that's what keeps me so young, is doing this comedy. So I guess it's a really long answer to the Joe Rogan thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, it's really important to do this. It just seems like the natural thing to do. You know, it's not always easy to do because, you know, you can only help a certain amount of people because of how many hours are in the day,
right,
or how many positions are open, or kind of, and then you get the weird part, which is when people are mad because you can't help them, yeah, and they'll take it personally, like, oh, this person, he doesn't think I'm funny, or she doesn't think I'm funny, and in reality, it has nothing to do with it. You know, I respect all comedians, you know, for what they do, but you know, that's what people do. They create drama that doesn't exist. And instead of working really hard or understanding how crazy the few slots are in the world to do all these amazing things, you just got to work really, really hard and stand out so that someone can't help but put you in that slot.
Yeah. I mean, can't you mention one comic we know that you've worked with? Jeez.
Yeah.
I think you just dropped every name that means something.
Don Rickles?
Yeah, who's this Don guy you're talking about?
I know. It was so weird because, you know, you're a little kid. It's like, you know, if you get to be on the same baseball team as Roberto Clemente, and, you know, it would be like, what? You know, or you're a defenseman alongside of Bobby Orr. You know,
yeah, that's
what it's like when you're playing with these players. You know, one of the coolest things that ever happened in my life is my father, I said earlier, huge comedy fan, loved Rickles the most. And how can you not? He's just so sweet, and his vulnerability comes through while he's shitting on you. You know what I mean? And he's so funny and so great and such a good human. And I got to meet him because I worked at the Letterman show. So I was very nervous, but he was so loving and warm and fantastic. And one night on a show, while the show is being recorded, you know, I'm on the left side of where Dave would sit, the Dave left. And Rickles can't think of the name Tommy Lee Jones. He can't remember, and I go, Tommy Lee Jones, and then Rickles says something like, you hockey puck or something like that, and Dave said, you know, why are you saying that to him? He helped you. And then Rickles said, oh, I love the kid. I love Eddie Brill or something like that.
Right.
My father, for him, that was the biggest thrill of his life, and wow, to be able to make my father that happy, you know what I mean? It's ridiculous. It's just like, so I appreciate it all like crazy. You know, I really appreciate it like crazy. So I'm very lucky to, you know, I work hard, and the lucky stuff happens close to that.
When did you realize in the 80s that, like, comedy was just really booming? Did it look just the same as when you started, or could you notice, hey, this is starting to really grow more than I could foresee?
Yeah, I didn't realize what was happening in the 80s because it happened so quickly. The club started in July of 1984 that I was running, you know, and then all of a sudden I got Star Search in 86. But there was a lot of comedians, you know, in the generation before mine that were just, you know, tearing it up. You know, guys like, you know, Brenner and Robert Klein and, you know, Lily Tomlin. And it was just, you know, Jonathan Winters and Bob Newhart. So this, you know, this has been going on for a long time. And then as the world changes, now there's more television shows with stand-up in the 80s. Then they kind of petered out. And then the clubs were popular again, and now the internet is so popular.
Yeah.
But we're doing a podcast. You know, that wasn't going on in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so as time changes, one thing stays consistent. There are funny people, the places to do funny things in them, and it's just the media that it's carried has changed.
Now, how did you land the Letterman gig?
Louis C.K. I was,
really?
Just drop that name.
Louis C.K. I was, you know, he was always good to me, and I always thought he was a great guy, and, you know, down to earth, and I've known him for a long time, and he's used me in a lot of things, which is really nice. And I was warming up the Dana Carvey show, and he was a writer there, and then he was working at Letterman as a writer, and they were looking for a warm up comic, and Louis said, "Hey, I saw this guy at the Dana Carvey show, and I know him. I think he can do the job." So I got a 6-week trial period and did it for 17 years. It was amazing.
17 years, wow,
pretty good.
So,
and I'll never forget. Louis was the man.
That's unbelievable.
And is.
So you do the warm up now. Those 6 weeks, were you like nervous, like you know, or did you just let it fly? Like, did you have any idea you'd be doing it for that long?
You know, it's hard to. I don't have like a documentary of that time in my brain. All I know is that at the beginning, I just, you know, I want to make him happy. I mean, and I try to stay out of his way and just be myself as much as I can. And it's so monumental because you're not just, first of all, you're working for David Letterman, which is ridiculous because he's, you know, one of the greatest comics, the host of all time,
mm-hmm.
of all time. But I have to perform every night on stage. Not that I have to, that I get to perform every night on stage at the Ed Sullivan Theater, which is one of the greatest venues I've ever done performing in my life. And it has a history of the greatest performances ever. And even Dave, I remember one year Dave looked up and he said, "You know, this is the greatest theater in the, we are the luckiest people to get to come here and work every day at this theater." So I got to be on that stage 17 years every night. It was ridiculous. So the more I did it, the more I was comfortable there. And the more I knew the band, I was comfortable there to my right. Dave, you know, is backstage. The other producers are on the left. And when I'm doing the warm up, you know, it was great. And the band was great to work with. And, you know, it was a pretty good thing. And then the weird opportunity came up that they needed a comedy booker. And we had always talked at the desk about stand-ups and comics we liked. And Zoe Friedman, who's one of the bookers, who's incredible, who booked me on the show. She went, got a killer job at Comedy Central. She left. And in the interim, they were looking for a booker, and they recommended me. And, of course, it changed my life because now I'm responsible for booking. You know, and I have so many thousands of friends, not just in New York, around the world. So, you know, I took my job seriously. I only had some small opportunities. I found out what Dave liked and from the executive producers what kind of comic that I was supposed to book as far as, you know, the style, the, you know, like sort of the Jake Johansson, the Wendy Liebmans, the, you know, more unique, odd, not odd, you know.
Alternative.
Like, you know, distinctive. Not alternative is could mean not.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say alternative, but I would say more distinct, like Jim Gaffigan or, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of a thing. Paula Poundstone, you know what I mean? It's like the smart comics who were, you know, had a very interesting original quality to them. And it really cuts down the list to a very small amount. But at the same time, there are tons of great comedians coming up. So the excitement is to go out, and I would fly all over the world and look at comics and try to find comics that fit the sensibility of the show that has been successful for a million years. So, you know, it was hard work. People hated me because I didn't book them, and But all I could do was tell the truth, and that's how I decided I could sleep at night. I was very honest. I'm a comic. I know what it's like to do the show. I wanted to make sure that at the end of every audition, I would sit with comics if they wanted, and I'd go over the sets with them. And, you know, that's what I wanted. And I found out that's not everyone what everyone else wanted. People wanted to hear either you got it, you got the show, or they didn't want to hear anything. So, you know, what I thought was being very helpful, you know, didn't make everyone happy.
That sounds like the greatest job ever.
Yeah. So, but I, you know, I that's the only way I could do it. I gave people a choice. They made that choice to come sit with me, and I let them know, hey, you know, these are the kind of bits that would work, and these are the kind of bits that wouldn't. But here's the weird part: is a lot of people think if you don't book them that you don't think they're funny. It doesn't mean that. You know, right. There are really, really funny people that I couldn't book on the Letterman show, or that I booked in a million other things that I booked because they were really funny. But, you know, people feel that way. You take it personally. You want to be on the Letterman show. I understand. So I had to walk a tightrope, but I worked really hard. I really cared for comics. I watched people grow. I watched Hannibal Buress grow from a young comic. And, you know, and then you see them, Tommy Jonigan, you know, and I'm only naming, you know, Mike Birbiglia. These are three of the people that when I first had kind of started, I sort of found and, you know, it was really good. My friend Karen Rontowski had been in comedy clubs for years and years and years, and one of the funniest people around, had never been on a network television show, and I gave her her break. And, you know, she was a little older than most networks want, because networks care more about age and looks. And the cool thing about the Letterman show is they cared about funny and original, not, and that's why I was proud to work there.
I mean, that's got to be just like such a great job for going all around, just being, you know, with comics, booking comics. Now, when you're doing all that, are you still working nightclubs and stuff, or are you?
Yeah. Well, that's my, still, stand-up's my favorite thing. The problem I had doing stand-up in those days, I would do a lot of the same stuff in my act. I didn't write so much because all I would do, you know, that job as a booker, it's a full-time job with assistants, and I didn't have any assistants. And I did it all myself. I had to watch every videotape. And you know, I can't be out there doing material that I've heard. Obviously, I would, you know, hate if anyone did that to any other comic. I wouldn't do that to anybody. So I had to be, you know, I heard thousands of comedians set. You know, so I was just sticking to my own act. And I wasn't really growing that much as a stand-up. Ever since the show's over and I'm not booking the comic there, I've had this whole renaissance of all this great new writing and stuff I'm enjoying on stage that I wish I could have done in those 17 years when I decided not to, when I decided to just keep doing the same thing over and over again and not really be experimental.
With all these travels, what really stood out as a common mistake you see with comedians who might be very funny but just be like a step off?
I don't know. It's a good question. You know, I think I like music so much, and I like the arts, you know, film and all this kind of stuff. And there's a certain soul to a really good film. More like if you hear Nina Simone sing, you know, you get that feeling of like, oh my God, that's otherworldly. And that's what you look for in a comedian as well, the same artistic soul of the comedian. And you can tell, or I could tell when I, you know, most of the time, you're never 100% right, that someone was going to be a great comic, even if they didn't have the material yet or whatever, because you see that they just had that something. Yeah. And then, you know, as a comic, knowing how you improve all the time, you know, I wouldn't see a comic and judge them forever as that one time I see him. I go back in 6 months or a year and, you know, see the comedian again and watch them, the amazing amount of growth. And then, you know, I would put them on television. There's a couple of situations where I had booked comics who didn't do that well the first time, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would go out. So the question kind of was, like, why is somebody off a little bit? It's just maybe because they're still learning. They're still getting their feet wet on stage. They're not getting enough stage time because there's not a lot of clubs in the community, or there's drama and there's kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The most important thing in the world is stage time. You can't teach comedy.
It's true.
You can't teach it, and there are no rules.
Yeah. So now you being surrounded by like comedy for every day, talking comics, talking to comics, booking comics, doing comedy. Did you ever go through like a burnout phase? Did you ever like were you sick of it at any point? Did you take a break from it, or is it just always
not drastic ever? You know, just like look, I'm going to go play. I'm you know going to go somewhere and play, and you know hang out with my family and just go. Yeah. You know, be with my family or do something like that, and just. But then you know, you miss it immediately. You know, the oxygen. Stand up. You know, performing on stage to me is oxygen, and you know, I needed to breathe. So I, you know, I worked my ass off. In the days before Letterman, I would do average 20 plus sets a week in the city. I'd run around and just get whatever stage time I could. I would do nearly 600 shows a year. I couldn't live without it. So. You know, you get burned out of any job, as good as it is. You're traveling all the time and blah, 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 you know, from one end of the world to the other. I don't even know what blah, blah, blah meant there. But it's like, what the, you know. But anyway, I'm like talking so much, I'm forgetting some of the words. But no, I would travel and I'd be tired, but then I, you know, take a day off and go to the beach or, you know,
right.
See my little niece.
Yeah.
You know. Go see a movie.
Yeah, so never any, like, extended period of time away from comedy then?
Nah, just, you know, just that 4 years in between college and graduating college in 1984 when I stopped doing stand-up. And, you know, I wish I didn't, but, you know, I am who I am because of whatever moves I've made in the past, you know?
It's amazing.
And if stopping for 4 years made me who I am today, that's what I have to, you know... That's who I am, and I have to live with that, you know.
So what do you – so now that the late night show, you're not doing that anymore, what are you doing now? What are you currently working on? What's coming up? Are you just getting out there touring? Like what's new for Eddie Brill?
Well, still stand-up. You know, I can't stop doing stand-up, so I go on as much as I could. I've been writing a lot these days, not only stand-up but stories – for a possible book. I'm trying to, you know, work on a book. I've written 165 stories for my life so far. And I've put some of them on Facebook and people have responded really well. And I've gotten some incredible contact from it. And I've been doing a lot of storytelling shows, which are terrific. And that's been fun. And then, you know, I've been working on a couple of comedy festivals, helping out with the booking in certain situations. And also helping... young comics who are working on television sets or something, people still contact me. They've done the Letterman show and they want to put their set together. And, you know, I worked on that for a long, long time. So I got pretty good at that. And also a few different scenarios where people have me consulting for film and for, you know, and so I've been doing a lot of different things. It's really fun, you know, having a good time.
With Letterman retired right now, what do you think about the landscape of late night today?
Yeah, I think it's great. I think what's happened is, you know, the internet has changed a lot of stuff. So a lot of people work, you know, along with the internet. There's, you know, that's the difference in the late night shows. They're all pretty funny, you know. There's a couple of people who I thought might have gotten shows that didn't. You know, I've seen a lot of people improve, like, I always thought Jimmy Kimmel was good, but, you know, now I think he's great. You know, I think he's really become amazing.
I kind of agree and, with you with that. I thought he kind of started slow, but he got into his niche.
I think everyone starts slow. You know, you can't just become a seasoned television broadcaster unless you make that your life, and you've got to make mistakes, and you got to do it for 10, 15 years, and then all of a sudden, boom, then you start, you know, rocking and rolling.
Right.
I mean, 10, 15 years of stuff in your career, at least, you can't just walk out and become a vibrant personality that is controlled in one way where you're able to have poise and carry a show and at the same time be creative enough to be able to play. Like, you know, Dave was very funny, but he was a weather person and he was in broadcasting and he did stand-up and he, you know, guest hosted The Tonight Show and, you know, it took him a while, but eventually he had a morning show, and, you know, but he You know, he's just one of a kind guy. So I don't know. I think that these people are doing a good job. I don't really watch too much. I pretty much watch on the internet the next day if something was great. I'll watch the stand-ups always on the shows. My friends, you know, comedians I like that are my pals, and also to see some new comics. You know, Colbert's been putting on a lot of young, good, great comics lately, and it makes me happy because they took a long time before they were putting stand-ups on. Now they're putting them on often and giving a lot of good people a chance. So it's pretty good, you know. I'm rooting for stand-ups. That's what I'm rooting for. And the late night shows put on stand-ups, and I'm a happy guy. And I would watch that show.
That's awesome. Example, like you just talking to us for a few minutes tonight, like you seem very enthusiastic still. Like you could hear it in your voice. Like you're very enthusiastic about talking comedy, talking with comics. Like you still like make it a point to help young comics to obviously do things like you just said, like podcasts and whatnot. Like, do you find that still very important?
I mean, I don't know you. You put a podcast together. You're obviously working your ass off. You showed, you know, that you reached out to me and I looked at what, you know, the name of it and looked it up, and you know, I figured, okay, why not? You know, I'll help you out. You know, not that it doesn't help. It helps me out too to get my voice out there.
Right.
And my thinking or whatever, with maybe a new crowd or whatever. But, you know, you always want to help a comic if he's working hard and doing that. So, yeah, I'll always help. I have an email box full of 6 and 7 minute sets that people want me to look through. And I'm just, you know, I do my best, but I've been working so hard on my own stuff. I don't have the time. I used to look at thousands of sets, literally. You know.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's funny.
But I don't mind it. I like it. I love, you know, like I said, when I was young, Sam Kinison, John Mendoza, Robert Schimmel, Louis Anderson. These people reached out to me and helped me. You know, Joan Rivers, the David Brenner. There's no way that I could sleep at night without doing that for others. You know, that's just the way it is. It's not about sleeping at night. It's about you have to. It's such a – it's so powerful and so magical to stand up, and it's easy to get bitter and easy to be cynical. And I've, you know, gotten trashed and, you know, treated poorly by certain people who have no idea how, you know, good I've been to comics and caring for comics, and just people who just, you know, they need to create this kind of madness. I still, after all of that kind of crap that's happened and all the stuff that happens in the world and in politics and in advertising and in religion and, you know, all of this craziness in the world, there is good. And when I'm on stage and I'm getting laughs, there's no better place in the world.
Now, all these, like, it's funny you were saying it before, like, you see thousands upon thousands of sets and you, like, have to try to keep that out of your own writing. I mean, that's got to be, you know, even just, I don't know, I feel like sometimes I almost not want to watch comedy because I don't want it to influence my writing, and you're seeing thousands of the best comics. How do you keep that separate?
What I do is go ahead, finish your question.
No, I was gonna say, how do you keep that from not entering, you know, like even subconsciously into your writing sometimes?
Yeah, no, because you be very conscious when you write. You know, I mean, there are times you write a joke, you say, hey, you know, Robert Schimmel was very incredible to me. He's like my brother. And there was a time when we shared an apartment in L.A. while he was with his family in Arizona. And I came running in the other room. I had written this joke. I thought it was so funny. And he goes, hey, I have that joke. I've never heard you do it. He goes, I know. I thought of it. And I go, so, you know, that kind of stuff happens. But as far as that, if I talk about the way I think and my life and my stuff, I don't think anyone can. I can't. It's nobody else's.
Right.
You know, you know what I mean? There's, they can't write my life. If someone does my life, there is, you know, I'll change the subject for a second. We were talking about this recently with some comics. There are some comics that are so funny that you try to do their act, you couldn't do it. You couldn't get the laugh they get because of the way they do it. Mm. You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, I've learned to just be myself on stage, play, ad lib, if I ever think I've heard it before or whatever, I get very, like, I ask around as it's been said, but that really hasn't happened in my life. I mean, there are premises that everyone does and you have right. to, you know, handle it your own way. But how about for yourself? Do you, you know, how do you write? Do you probably write differently than, you know, Mike or the dog barking in the background?
The dog's the best out of the three of us. But yeah. when I...
he has a solid 8 minutes.
Yeah.
Solid eight.
That bark joke goes over big every time.
I want to use it, but, you know, I'm talking about not taking material. And then if I take the bark joke, I look like an idiot.
I don't know. When I write, like, especially, you know, I'm still relatively newer comic, but definitely, like, even what you just said, I try to, at least nowadays, make it as personal as possible. If it, like you just said, if it happened to you or if it's your, you know, if it's your words coming through it, like, about a certain thing and, you know, like a lot of my stuff now is about my family and divorce and my dog. And so it's like all stuff that's happened to me. So I've tried to put that more and more and more. And I have a lot of friends who are comics, good guys who, you know, just talking to them, it's very interesting how everyone's kind of different the way they write. Some sit down and write, some write verbally on stage and then, you know, just pick and choose what works. I think nowadays I'm kind of more of a write the premise and then kind of speak it out on stage and then figure out what worked and what didn't. But I used to write like word for word, and I feel like once I stopped doing that, it got better. I don't know.
Yeah, because, you know, it's hard to create word for word, but you could do that. I mean, you know, people write scripts for plays.
Of course.
And word for word, they're great. And, you know, Carlin would take things and memorize them and write them word for word, but he had all that experience behind him and how to create that word to be, you know, conversational. You know, it's, you go to a place and go, you're in, you know, what do you call it? Man of La Mancha, for, I can't even think of the name of a play. So you're in Cats. That would be a horrible example if they don't speak much English. But you say the same line every night. Meow, 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 meow. All right, already with this. And, you know, the same thing in comedy. You do a lot of the same stuff. You might say it a little differently, but it's got, you know, you learn from stage time how to be able to perform the stuff you write. And, if you know, working with Robert Schimmel all those years, you know, he would take a joke and just change it a little bit each night or change a word. Or he said, yeah, I just do that for myself. I just, you know, I play, and if it doesn't work as good as the thing I tried 2 days ago, I'll go back to that one. But, you know, it's good to play and experiment and be open-minded and be comfortable. And, again, the only way to really be comfortable is to do it. The only way. You know, I've been helping comics. When I went to school, we helped start this comedy writing department, which I know we're taping this out of, you know, it'll be recorded later. But this weekend I'm teaching at my old college. I've been doing that for 11 years. And it's just, you know, you can go to Emerson College and major in comedy. And,
really?
yeah, it just started, you know.
Major in comedy.
Wow.
Yeah. Comedy writing, comedy performing, all this kind of stuff. Comedy film.
Tell my
cool.
parents. My parents laughed at this. My parents laughed at me enough when I told them I majored in communication.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, that's what I did. That's what it was called.
Yep.
But people like, well, you know, you say you can't teach comedy, but you teach at the college or you run workshops. And I say, no, you can't teach it. But what you can do is you can workshop it. You can be each other's eyes and ears and play.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what actors do. And that's what musicians do. And, you know, so I sort of run it like almost like a jazz club where comics are going on stage and everyone's giving feedback. And then you have to realize that, you know, you don't have to listen to any of the feedback. You almost learn more from giving feedback than you do from doing the comedy itself. So, you know, there's always ways to get better. But the number one way to get better at it is just find stage time. Do whatever it takes to get on stage with integrity, you know. Get on stage, find it. And if you can't get on stage because you live somewhere where there's no comedy, then you have to move or do something else.
Yeah. Makes complete sense. Now I want to go back to school. sounds like a great degree. How about you? How do you write?
I mean, I go by like past references and kind of just try to find in my head what I find is funny and change things around. Try to learn from the stage where sometimes I find something hilarious and it's not working. Times like that. I mean, it's kind of like with most people. I try to keep it personal. I'm not the kind of guy, oh, did you see what Trump did today? Yeah. Kind of comedians.
Right.
You know, I mean, but it kind of speaks.
But you can also.
Go ahead.
But Mike, you can also say, you don't have to be that guy who does the Trump joke, but how does the election affect you? How do you feel as a human being? Does it make you laugh? Does it piss you off? Do you find it ironic? And you can find material in it without doing Trump has crazy hair,
yeah,
or you know, Hillary lies, or whatever the main joke would be on either side. You can find what's the essence of it, you know, what makes you laugh, what pisses you off, what you find ironic. And then, you know, and if you talk about personal stuff, again, that could work. But you could talk about anything then when that kind of stuff comes up.
It's true. It's true.
You taught me.
Yeah. But Eddie, I don't want to take up all your time. I could literally pick your brain for hours. You know, it's amazing. It's amazing how much you've done. You know, it really is to look at like all the stuff you've done and just hear, you know, the people you've worked with and whatnot. So it really is a joy to hear, especially for two, you know, relatively newer comics. It's like really cool to hear like that you still have a very distinct enthusiasm about stand up. You know, you can tell. Just through talking, you know, not even like joking around. You just, you know, you can tell how much you love it.
Yeah, I do. And I love that you guys love it too and that you're doing whatever it takes to get it done. You know, it's pretty cool. And, you know, as much as I've been doing it, I'm not ready to stop.
Don't.
You know, I want to do more comedy and more things in the industry and meet more, and you know, fun, incredibly smart, talented people that you can be creative with. And you know, like I said earlier, and I've been thinking about this lately because I've had a lot of friends pass away in the last year. It's like life is so short, and the choices you make are so important. It's like, do I want to surround myself with a really fun, positive, hard, you know, being it's comedy is not an easy gig. It's hard. So but if you put the work in, you know, that's how you get better at it, and then it becomes really fun because you put the work in and the reward is so great. So, you know, there's a lot of comics who'll say, comedy, but in reality, most of them are going, I fucking love it.
Yeah. So, Eddie, if people want to, you know, if they want to check you out or follow you or send you a message if they hear this or something like that, where can they go?
Well, it's Eddie_Brill over at the Twitter world. I'm on Facebook. I have eddiebrill.com, which I just recently redid. I have to do more stuff on it because I just literally recently had some new company work on that. And, you know, you find me at the comedy club. Look for me online. I'm always trying to do something. So I'm not far. I'm very easy to reach. So feel free to say hello.
I could vouch for that. You were, you know, we put this together quick and easy and, other than your poker night, you pretty much,
yeah, exactly.
We locked down a date, but
worked out nice.
Eddie, thanks so much. I'm gonna try to get this up in the next. I might even be able to get it up tonight, but if not, I'll get it up tomorrow, and I'll tag you in it and all that fun stuff. So
I get on my Facebook page and on my Twitter, and then we'll get people to listen, or maybe. Or shut it off. Whatever.
Yeah. Most likely option two.
Yeah.
But Eddie, thanks so much.
All right.
Appreciate it, man.
All right, you guys take care. Mike, sorry we didn't talk more, and I even cut you off when you started talking about your comedy. But you know, I hope
most people do that.
Yeah. Well, you and Mike have very similar careers.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I'm almost at the 5-decade mark.
Yeah.
Almost.
Almost. Well, you know, I'm working my way there too. So, you know, we'll get there.
Thanks so much, Eddie.
Appreciate it, man.
All right. Be well. Tell the dog I said hey.
All right. All right.
Catch you later.
Take care.
Right, bye, guys.
How the hell did I get him on the pod? Like, it feels like we have no business talking to that guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty remarkable.
We struggled to get a punter from the XFL, and you get Eddie Brill.
Yeah. Yeah, we can't lock down the taser ball guys,
nope.
The night fight guys.
The untapped creator.
Yeah. But yet we get the guy who booked comedy for David Letterman for 17 years. So it's just the internet's a wacky world, man, like who you can get in touch with. Like, yeah.
Call Sean Kemp again. Let's see what happens. Yeah. We're on a roll.
Yeah, we can't get those guys, but yet we've had like Eddie Brill lately, Lilo Brancato, all these, I don't know, just wild. Mm-hmm. But that was that's pretty super insightful, like super like just friendly. And you could tell the passion he still has for it. Yeah. He sounds like he's 25 years old, you know, like the way he just seems chipper about it, you know?
Yeah, he's appreciative, he's super psyched and all. You could tell tomorrow comes, he's like, oh, I can't, is there a new comedy today? Oh, shit, let me try something out.
Yeah, we actually know a comic who went and had his jokes, like, read by his material. Eddie Brill went over his stuff with him.
Oh, okay.
And he said the same thing, he's like the nicest guy in the world, so certainly seems like it.
Yeah.
But,
oh, I think I know the guy now.
Yeah. But let's take a quick break. It's going to pee, and then we'll come right back. Let's switch gears here. Walking Dead is back.
Yeah, man.
Walking Dead came back with a bang.
They didn't disappoint.
No. As we said before, they never disappoint on first and last episodes. They're pretty much always good.
I don't know. I've had a few openers where I'm kind of like, yeah, and then like enders are like,
yeah. Yeah, they're usually pretty intense, at least anyway.
Yeah, kind of like the one I can think of was the time that left the governor alive, where he stormed the prison and then he fled, and it was just like he shot up people and he left.
Yeah,
it was like that's a little anticlimactic.
That seems like so long ago already, and like you know, like that's a tough job to make like the next villain like way more evil than the governor, so they definitely did a pretty good job at that.
Yeah, Negan, a lot of Walking Dead comic fans were kind of saying back on, this is a guy a lot of people questioned, well, how are they gonna do him because he's so badass and he does a lot of un-PR stuff, so
yeah,
like in the comic books when he killed off Glenn, his statement was, oh damn, Lucille's gonna be hungry in 30 minutes.
Yeah. Still should have said that. But yeah, they definitely pushed the envelope, which is awesome to see. I love when the AMC lets them do pretty much anything. Okay, it's just like Comedy Central let South Park do anything, you know, like it's nice to see, you know, it's a cable network, you know, on late, your children shouldn't be watching, so
exactly.
Let the adults have their show.
We're paying $80-$90 a month for this stuff. Give us a station where we don't have to pay an extra $30 a year, a curse word.
Yeah. So yeah, my prediction was, I actually had a bet with a guy at work. I predicted Abraham. He predicted Glenn. So it was a push. We both.
That's what I basically said. I said it was going to. I was favoring Abraham. Glenn was number two, and then my upset was Michonne. Mm. And they were also kind of badass in the comics. They chop off Rick's arm, but they kind of brought it in without having to do it.
Yeah, I mean, that scene was ridiculous. Andrew Lincoln is a hell of an actor, man.
Both them guys, man.
Yeah.
I mean,
like, that scene with, you know, him about to cut Carl's arm off was ridiculous. You know, that was freaking intense, you know. And it's awesome, too, when you see him, like, speaking
English,
you know. Yeah. It's like, wow. Yeah.
Him, Maggie,
a bunch of them. Morgan. Yep. Yeah.
I even like Morgan's episode there. Usually the side off one or like horrible.
I still don't understand. I know I've said this before. Why can't we have intermingling stories in one episode? Like, let's check in with the guys. Let's check in with this. Let's, like, hopefully next week's back to Negan and them.
Nah, it's going to be following Daryl where he's at.
Daryl's with...
No, he got kidnapped. Remember after he punched Negan, he's like, I'm keeping him.
Yeah.
So he's with the Saviors. He's not with the group.
Yeah, but that's Negan's people, right?
That's Negan. Yeah, so. I mean, it continues the Negan saga, but it's like you're still saying back on how the hell they're going to act when they go back to Alexandria.
Yeah, like they can mix all the stories and we can see what's going on all the time. That's always been my biggest problem with the show. Like, I don't want to wait 4 weeks to see what happens
And like,
breaking them.
Generally, any other, even like you look at comedies, there's always a primary story and then a secondary story.
Yeah, I know. Like, let's see what's going on. Let's see, you know.
Yeah. Meanwhile.
Meanwhile, all I could think about watching
Sunday's episode was our LARPing thing. That's all I could think about. I was like, oh, would it be funny if these guys just thought like the zombies were other LARPers? Like, great costume, man.
Man, he really commits to the character, man.
Two damage. The kingdom.
Like, one of the walkers is just like, wait a minute, what's my numbers at?
Yeah. A little weird. The kingdom's a little weird. Why are they playing like medieval times?
I mean, from the comic, if you watch the whole episode, he kind of says it's a facade where he was just like a guy out there. He actually came across the tiger. It sounded like he got it, but then stories started going around. Oh, he tamed his tiger. He grabbed it with his bare hands and he kept it. And it's basically to keep up the facade to give all the survivors kind of the aura of, okay, this is the new world. We're safe. And that kind of stuff.
It's interesting. Tiger's interesting.
Shiva.
You know, it's funny. Apparently, they must be very smart because they're the only people who have thought to wear armor so far. You know, like
that's a thought.
You know, like not one. No one like Rick never thought, hey, maybe we should wear some armor.
Yeah,
a lot less casualties. Probably T-Dog might still be around.
No, guys, just going to weigh us down. Let's keep going. Dodge the bullets.
A little armor, you know? What, it can't hurt.
At least a helmet, for God's sake.
But yeah, Walking Dead.
It would save the other two guys.
I know. But yeah, I'm glad that show's back. You know, as much problems as I have with it sometimes, it always keeps my attention. And it usually delivers something.
Yeah.
You know, but speaking of Halloween-ish things, I never got to talk about this because we had our Halloween episode, and then we took a week off, and then we had your thing.
Mm-hmm.
We went to that haunted house, but I went to another haunted house.
Okay, I was waiting for this.
The Brighton Asylum, which was in Passaic. So I went with Joe Fernandez and Mark Riccadonna and James and Kevin Israel, Ritu.
Oh, wow.
Ted Daniels. Yeah, I think that was it. So, I was walking with Joe, and they had extra tickets, and we decided to go. Now, the one we went to, you got separated and everything. This one was pretty cool. So we get there, and we had tickets for 8 o'clock. We had to wait in line for about an hour. But the line was actually kind of fun. When you're with those guys, it's like, it's just constant jokes, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, they have people walking around scaring people in line and stuff. They scared Alex, like, 6 times in line. And we're all goofing around and whatnot. And they've gone before. And they're like, you got to go with Fernandez. You got to go with Fernandez. We want to be, everyone's like, I'm like, well, I want to go with Fernandez too. And they like, so we start off, they give you guns in the first section because you got to shoot all these zombies.
Okay.
And we're going as a group. And Joe Fernandez is like,
what kind of gun is it? Is it a laser? Is it
paintball? It's like a laser, but it's like heavy, like a real gun. It's kind of cool. So I got the second gun. They only give you two guns for the group. So Joe Fernandez is like, well, I have arms experience. We're like, did you just say you have arms experience to shoot zombies in a haunted house? Now, Joe Fernandez, usually a pretty low-key, not too emotional kind of guy. Joe Fernandez in a haunted house is literally a must-see for every person on this earth. He turns into, like, Scooby-Doo scared. Like, his arms are flailing. He's like, whoa! Ah! Now, I'm behind Mark Riccadonna. I hear him just bawling. I can't stop laughing the whole time. My chest is hurting. Joe is like, I can't, like, hands in the air, like, knees, like, every time he went around the corner, he'd be like, ah! You know, like, whoa! You know, at one point, he went into a corner, and Kevin Israel was like, you all right? He's like, yeah, I'm just taking a break, you know, taking a break. And then one time this guy pops out and he scares Joe, and Joe literally like points in his face and he's like, whoa, whoa, like acknowledging that he got scared. So between him and my girlfriend, every 2 seconds, screaming, I was laughing so hard. I had like tears running down my face. And Joe, at one point we go in this room and there's these hands hanging from the ceiling, and Kevin Israel touches him, and he's like, oh, they're fake. And then Joe goes, and then the guy's like, no, it's not. No, I'm not. It was an actual guy, like, who had, like, plastic on his hand. And then Joe, like, was like, ah! You know? So It was so much fun, and it was totally like a different type of haunted house. It was the scene, or the setting, or whatever you want to call it. The set like was amazing. At one point, it was like Goonies. It was like you were in a cave, and like there's like I don't know. It was just like you had to walk through all these things, and these little monsters pop out, and just a very very. It's probably the funniest thing that's happened all fall, like watching Joe.
Like going into it, did you guys know he was like a jumpy type of character?
Well, I was told that. Because I guess they've done this a couple years now. But different, they go to a different one every year. I was told that Joe is worth the price of admission. Like, Joe is. And my God. Like, I want to make a series where we just send Joe into haunted houses with, like, a GoPro like facing him and a GoPro facing out and just, like, interviewing all the
Joe,
monsters.
You're in the vapor room.
Just following Joe. I mean, you know... It, following Fernandez, there it is.
All right,
you know, and we just do like 8 haunted houses, like have him go through and like have you know talk to all the people and just watch Joe because it is comedy gold. And you know, like he goes into like, yeah, you know, I get a little scared, blah 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 blah. It's like jumping.
Keep your head on a swivel.
Fantastic.
It's that simple. You come into a corner, take the take the outside of the corner, let them come out to you.
Yeah, I mean, those guys, though, man, that was a good group of guys to go with. Like, everything was funny. You know, it was just like joke after joke after joke, you know. And all of them are just really funny dudes. So it was absolutely priceless.
It'd be great if next year you go with, like, the worst comedians of all time. Internet.
All right, we're back.
We are.
Yeah.
Look at us.
So, Mike Brewer, what you got? You got something over there.
Yeah. So, whether this comes out tonight or it's next week tonight, we might have a decider in the World Series.
We might. I'm rooting for the Indians.
You still rooting for the Indians?
Yes.
It's going to be – it's been a hell of a pitcher's duel, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what my favorite is? The fact that John Lester apparently can't throw the first base, so they're almost taunting him now. Did you notice that?
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
What's wrong with him?
Apparently, he has some kind of...
Cubs are up 3-0.
Oh, okay. So this could be keep going. He has some kind of weird issue where he literally can't throw a pickoff move to first. So guys are literally like jumping, almost mocking him. Come on! Throw the ball to first, and it's so hilarious. That's why he leads the league in stolen bases on
Jesus.
Him, because he literally cannot throw. And any time he does it, it's almost like, eh. It's like,
how does that not get fixed over like a professional career? You know,
well, you look at stuff like kind of like Robert Griffin. He keeps on saying, "I don't know how to slide." Where you're like, that is like the simplest thing on earth, but he always gets half his body broken in.
Okay.
So I came up with a little fun little thing here. Now, do you know the last time the Cubs won the World Series?
That would be, was it 1904? 1914?
1908.
Oh, wait,
what about the Indians?
48.
Correct.
Yeah.
So what I got here is I'm going to list a quote-unquote fact from 1908 and 1948, and you tell me which one is incorrect.
Okay,
I'm going to say, like, we'll just throw out the first one, for example. For presidents, 1908, Teddy Roosevelt, 1948, Harry S. Truman. One of them is incorrect.
Harry Truman.
You're right. It was actually FDR. Yep. So let's keep going here.
Okay, so I have to say if 1908 is the wrong one or 48
You can either say this one's correct or this one's wrong.
All right,
either
sounds
way.
Good.
All right. States of the United States, 1908, 46, 1948, 47.
I'm going to go 1908.
As correct or incorrect?
As incorrect.
1948 is the incorrect answer. There were 48 states.
All right. One for two.
Yep. Which inventions were tea bags invented in 1908 or were hand dryers invented in 1948?
Tea bags and hand dryers. Well, tea bags seem... I feel like you might put that to throw me off, because tea bags seem like it's something that's been around forever. And hand dryers sound like something more modern. So I'm actually going to say that the tea bag was the incorrect one.
Tea bags were invented in 1904.
All right.
All right.
Two for three.
Since we're talking about the World Series, Major League Baseball teams, 12 teams in 1908 or 16 teams in 1948?
All right. 12 teams in
1908 or 16 teams in 1948?
16 teams in 1948.
It was 1908, incorrect. In fact, it was 16 in both years.
Wow, no expansion from 08 to 48. Correct. Wow, that's 40 years.
Yeah. Gas prices per gallon was in 1908, was the average in 1908 18 cents, or was the average in 1948 26 cents?
In 48, I'm going to say that was correct. So 1908, I'm going to say incorrect.
You are right.
All right. All right.
20 cents per gallon.
On the board. I don't know what that means. I just feel like that's something you yell when you're in a game show. On the board. On the board now. Get him out.
This is the Wheel of Fortune. constitutional amendments. Were there 15 in 1908 or 22 in 1948?
One more time, please.
Were there 15 constitutional amendments in 1908? Or were there 22 constitutional amendments in 1948?
22. So 15 in 1908 was incorrect.
1948 was incorrect. There was only 21. Only 21.
Yeah.
A little back and forth here.
Bastards.
Who was?
I can't get a streak going.
Yeah. Born in this year, was Lou Costello born in 1908? Or was Samuel L. Jackson born in 1948?
Oh, man. Samuel, are you that old? I guess you are. I don't think Samuel Jackson was born in 48.
He was. Lou Costello was in 1906. Okay. Summer Olympics.
Summer Olympics. Got it.
Was the Summer Olympics in Athens in 1908 or London in 1948?
Athens in 1908. I don't think it was in Athens in 1908.
You're correct. Actually, both were in London.
All right. All right.
Average life for a male.
Okay.
Was the average life for a male 47.8 years in 1908 or 64.6 in 1948?
I feel like the 47 seems a little low. I'm going to go with the 1908. It's the wrong one.
You're correct.
All right.
49 and a half.
All right.
Not that off.
All right. All right.
All right.
That's the streak.
All right. Which one of these was a song in that year? Was Take Me Out to the Ball Game a song in 1908? Or was Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire a song in 1948?
Take Me Out to the Ball Game. Wrong.
Nope, it was 1908. It was the number one song of 1908.
Here's your new number one hit.
Take me out to the ball game.
Get you.
Some couple had sex to that.
Yeah.
In the back of their Model T.
Yeah. Get your flapper dresses and the roaring. I don't even know what that is. The roaring tens. With a new hit from blah, 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 and the round, Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
As a side note, Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire by Nat King Cole, 1946. All right, so you've been back and forth on this one, so this one should be the decide whether you're a winner or not.
All right.
These are two stories. Tell me which one actually happened in the year.
Come on, Brennan.
In 1908, John Crone walked over 9,000 miles around the perimeter of the United States with his wheelbarrow in 357 days. Or mental health wing of Mercy Hospital burns down and kills 41 in Davenport, Louisiana in 1948.
God, I want to believe the wheelbarrow story. I want to. Mental hospital burning down in 48. I'm going to say. Now, my thinking is that you would try to throw me off with the wheelbarrow, but it might be the shockingly real thing. What is it again? He walked the perimeter of the United States?
Yeah. The
how many times?
John Crone walked over 9,000 miles around the perimeter of the United States with his wheelbarrow. He walked it in 357 days.
I'm going to go 1948 is the lie. It's false.
Well, they're both true stories, but that happened in 1950. So you are correct, sir. You won the game.
All right! Do I get a headshot?
Yeah, what do you have here where I can hit with a hammer?
Your computer!
Oh, they had the podcast on it. My bad. Hi, Eddie. We tried some comedy. It wasn't really smart.
So, before we get out of here, I had a pretty low moment in my life this week.
Oh, no. What happened?
So, next week I'm going away. I'm going to the Grand Canyon.
Okay.
I'm pretty excited about it. We're going for like 4 days. Okay.
Nice.
Flying on a Wednesday. And I'm looking up these excursions, you know.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, I look up, jeep rides, there's hikes, there's things. And then there's one that's a mule ride.
Oh.
I'm like, oh, that sounds really fun. Like a mule ride down into the canyon, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a lot of horseback riding, never rode a mule. So that would be pretty cool. So I'm all excited to book it.
You had expertise going into this mule ride.
Right. I'm thinking that maybe like I might be one of the leaders because, yeah. They're like, hey, you look like you got horseback.
Like, you're the kind of guy who goes into it. It's like, I hope it's like the episode of the Brady Bunch where their camp leader
away. That is the second Brady Bunch reference. Someone, my guy I work with, was like, didn't the Brady's go on a mule ride? I'm like, I don't know. And he brought it up. He's like, yeah.
Yeah, and Cindy went lost, and everybody, Cindy. And they found an Indian tribe.
Old TV is your wheelhouse. If we had like a trivia team and there was like, you were, that was one of the categories, I would have you on my panel.
I do know. I remember when you hosted one night, and it was me, Izzy, Alex, and the Camachos. And you brought up the question, name Grandpa Munster's
car.
I brought it up in like five. I'm like, 12.
Yeah, you know.
Boom, I walked up. Like, everybody's looking. He had a car? What? You want his name?
That's like, one of the trivia, the win, lose, or draw questions was you being a connoisseur of shitty TV.
Mm-hmm.
You know it. But anyway, so yeah. So the mules. I'm thinking, me and Alex will be riding. The sun will be maybe setting on the Grand Canyon. She looks at me on that mule, and she's like, God.
You're both wearing cowboy hats. She's looking kind of cute. You know, you do that kiss in the sunset photo.
Right. I kind of got, like, dirty jeans on, my boots, and, like, flannel. And, like, the instructor's like, you are really good. We want to recommend you for mule school.
We want you to fly out here and be the head mule man.
Yeah, the mule man. The mule man. You've heard of Carl Malone, the mailman.
Yeah.
You're going to be Scott Brennan, the mule man.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, like, she's going to just the pheromones that I would be putting out, her seeing this rugged mule man just riding and just showing everyone how to ride. Like, I'm really looking forward to it. and then? So I go to book it. I'm like, oh, this sounds great. It's a 3-hour tour. You, like, stop, and they tell you the history of all these places. I'm like, this is great. And he's like, all right, no problem. We'll book you for a 9 o'clock ride. We just got to go over some of the rider qualifications.
Okay.
I'm like, okay. He's like, are you
masculine? Absolutely.
He's like, are you guys in good health? I'm like, yeah, I'm great. I'm good. I feel pretty
good. How many heart attacks happen on a mule ride? Just out of curiosity.
And then he says, like, are you, blah, blah. I don't know, a couple questions. And then he says, well, how much do you weigh? I'm like, okay, hold on here. Now I'm thinking, like, oh, man, there's a weight restriction on the mule. And he's like, well, you have to be 225 pounds with gear on.
I'm
like, oh. And I'm like 230.
With gear?
Yeah.
And how much is gear
like with clothes, like a helmet, clothes, a jacket, maybe a backpack, whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm 235. Like, that's what I usually sit at, give or take,
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I can't. And like, I'm just like an awkward pause on the phone. I didn't know what to say to the guy. Now, do I lie to the guy and then get there and they weigh you? And then they're like, no. And like, Alex is by herself with these other mule men. And these and other mule men sweep her away.
You're sitting up on the top of the canyon thinking about all these men looking at your woman.
Yeah.
And
all these mule men just making passes at her.
See your man can't ride a mule like
you know how
me.
Those like Mexican guys can make the horses dance? Like, flaunt. They're peacocking on their mule.
I think
that
was a speed. Gonzalez cartoon you're thinking about.
No, I've seen it before. So then I'm stuck there, and she's out with all these mysterious mule men just making mule love out in the canyon, and I'm
mule
stuck.
Love is the sexiest love.
Right. Now, and how embarrassing is that? I go, and they're like, sir, you're too fat for the mule. You know?
In your bar all by yourself eating nachos, realizing that you're even further away from being a mule man.
Yeah. So, like, my options are, do I fast for a week and, like, try to lose 10 pounds like a fighter?
Like the UFC, man. You're in a sauna with that fat suit on and I'll just do jumping jacks for an hour.
Weighing in before the fight, like, in my underwear. Like, me and the mule, like, face to face. The other thing I'm thinking is, like, I'm a tall guy. That's why I weigh that much. And I'm also thinking, am I too tall for you? Like, are my feet going to be dragged, like, all the way down down by the ground?
You got to lean against the mule, kind of have your arms and legs out like you're doing the Superman.
So, very depressing. I had to, like, hang up the phone, like, and be like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm too fat for the – like, I'm too fat for the mule ride. That's a very – hurtful
what
thing.
Was that? We had another fat one, Jimmy.
Yeah, like you can't throw me like a HGH like mule or like a donkey that
all this science and we can't build a mule that can take your weight.
Yeah, an elephant, a camel. You don't have something in the back that you know like
that'd be awesome. A camel ride down the Grand Canyon. Yeah.
So
I would pay for that.
Now it's no mule ride for me. Now I'm looking into horseback rides and it was depressing. My mule man.
I just see you on a horse going down the canyon crying. You know, what's wrong, honey? It's not the same.
It's not a mule.
You want a granola bar? No! I'm too fat!
So, if Eddie Brill wasn't on this episode, I would name this episode Too Fat for a Mule. It might still have to be that.
Too fat for a mule - Eddie Brill. What?
So.
I get listens for that.
So, yeah, that's my life. Mm. But other than that, I did two real cool comedy shows. One was you did the Triumph Brewery. That was fun. It was a good show. It was all gingers. It was me, Aaron McGuire, Doug Karp, and Molly Sperduto. Mm-hmm. We're like, Rocco, really? And it was funny because he let this like guy, I guess he's part of the meetup groups or whatever that come, like sing the Monster Mash like before the thing. I'm like, oh man, we really made it now.
Yeah, you're gonna get some tonight, buddy.
Yeah, the Monster Mash is pretty much the lowest form of entertainment there is.
Maybe he pointed to a woman and like, I'm gonna Monster Mash. Well,
what's pretty funny is I was like, because the host, she didn't acknowledge it. I'm like, the comic in me has to acknowledge this guy.
Yeah.
So I'm like, the Monster Mash, huh, sir? And like, he was married for like 30 years to his wife. I'm like, is that how you guys keep it spicy? Like, you're in the bedroom, like, Dracula is coming to the bed right now. It went over really, really, really well. Yeah, like, Wolfman is taking off his pants. Ooh. So, like, it worked really well, but it was like, what the hell am I doing? And then I did one at this in New Hope at this old rock club. It was like Peter and John's or something like that. The ceilings were like 7 feet tall, like real low and intimate. And that was like a really awesome show. Like, it was just fun. Like, the booths were like on top of you.
Oh,
it was
nice.
Really cool. But, yeah, Berlo, anything to promote? Let's get out of here.
I'll just promote my Facebook page, facebook.com/theberl721. I'm going to keep up with the Tonight on the Walking Dead. You can see some of my past Pumpkin Spice whatevers. Lord knows I still got to figure out 31 2 days after the month ends. But
great promotion, buddy.
Well, here's what happened. We kind of talked before. I had a horrible headache on Monday where I couldn't do it. And the number one request everybody's saying is do a pumpkin. So I was going to do the pumpkin that I had, and I went over to it, and it's kind of got some drippy spots and stuff like that.
Not the pumpkin we carved.
No, well, that's a funny story. I forgot to bring it up. So after my vacation,
yeah,
when we came back, I guess me and Izzy didn't realize the life expectancy of a pumpkin. So we came back, and both pumpkins were melted into a...
Yeah, ours went like that, too.
It went right... Like...
I mean, if you want to gnaw on the pumpkin that's outside right now, you could just pick it up and gnaw on it. You know, I don't know if it's squirrel shit in it or a homeless man, but feel free, buddy.
But, yeah, that will eventually happen, and I got some other stuff going. I will definitely do the Leprechaun reviews coming up to get some more points for
awesome.
Shenanigans Showdown, and... Who knows? Maybe I'll do some more live stuff. I got some decent feedback from it. So
sounds good. I'll just promote this Sunday, because I'll definitely get this episode up this Sunday. I'll be at Tierney's Tavern in Montclair. Mm. And November 17th is the next. Oh, my God. This dog today.
Is Roof. Me. Roof. Next. Roof.
The next Verbal Shenanigans show at Tap House 15. Raising money for, we're doing a little 50-50 for, pets for vets, where they take pets. Can you let him in, that yeah, asshole? Sure. Where are we raising some money for that? It's an awesome lineup. Berlow unfortunately can't be there, but your boy Scott will be filling his spot. Okay, Kevin Guti, Jackie Burns going to be hosting. Andy Hayward, one of my favorite comics out there, and the headliner, Mr. Mike Gaffney from Joe Fernandez is now, no, not All in Our Heads podcast. And so that should be a fantastic show.
Thanks for being my backup, buddy.
No problem. I got you, buddy. with that in mind, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Hey, please like us on iTunes. Yeah. Please leave us a review, damn it.
Mm-hmm.
And
Stitcher.
Listen Pod to page. Some shit. Listen to the episodes. There's been a lot of good ones lately. Mm-hmm. Goodbye. David Letterman, what was his sign out?
He threw a pencil at the camera, I think.
Yeah. No, don't throw it. I'm going to throw my beer at the mixing board.
Scott, it happened again.